Love Osho Podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Deva Abhinandan. Abhinandan took sannyas in 1977 and is a singer, writer and meditation teacher. Abhinandan wrote the introduction to some Osho books and has over 30 years experience in biodynamic craniosacral therapy. Abhi, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a challenging time here, but I'm good.
So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Okay. Well, I was in the 70s, in the mid-70s, I left England and went to live in Ibiza. And we had a nice community there. And sort of in 1976, my girlfriend had this one book. We were living together and she had this Way of the White Cloud. And I started reading it and I knew it would change. I knew almost immediately that even when I read the introduction, I knew that I had to go to India. So, you know, I didn't have any money so much. So I went to England and I painted someone's house or something. And I bought a one-way ticket to India, very cheap, on Kuwait Airlines. And I had no idea what I was doing, really. I just knew that I needed to do this. And so I put everything in an old backpack and set off. And that's basically the beginning. And, you know, it was quite a journey because I was very naive. And when I got to, when I got there, you know, to India, I'd never experienced anything like landing in Bombay, Mumbai. And I got on a train and, someone stole all of my clothes and my backpack. And, so I landed there with no clothes and about £30 in my pocket and a one-way ticket. So, you know, that was amazing, really.
Do you remember? How was your first meeting with Osho?
Yes. In 5 days will be the anniversary, 43 years, I think, you know. And I didn't hesitate. There was one point where I was standing in the garden of the ashram and I thought, this man's really dangerous. He's going to take away all my ego. And so I need to escape. And I thought, well, if it's this strong, I need to stay. So I booked, you know, darshan, whatever, and to take sannyas. And I did. And it was pouring with rain. And I, you know, it was a monsoon. And I went there and he gave me the name Swami Deva Abhinandan. He said, Abhinandan means divine welcome. It's like congratulations, the name. It was more than bliss when I met him. It was like something so deep. It took me maybe months to realize what had happened, really.
And then after that first meeting during the sannyas, have you had any intimate moments with Osho or one-to-one meetings, or have you got any personal advice through questions or letters or anything like that?
Yes. So very often we went there to do performances for him. You know, we had a mime troupe and he would like us to come and do, you know, whatever we were doing in the ashram and share, you know. But also he read something that I'd written. I think it was for the magazine or something, or I sent him a poem once and he read it in the discourse. And then he sent a handwritten note to the editors, actually, not to me, but it said he must write more. So then I wrote the introductions to some of his books, and I wrote all these sort of introduction to the, some of the darshan diaries, and I started writing. And, you know, I had occasional, you know, what we called the energy darshans, which were really powerful, powerful things. You know, they were where he would give us energy work. And I had quite a few of those with him. We, you know, maybe once a month we would have one of these powerful energy darshans. You know, they're indescribable what happens in those, you know. I remember once I had an opportunity to go and record music somewhere else. And I was wondering whether I should leave the ashram. And I went and asked him a question. I said, should I leave or should I stay? He said, why are you asking me? And as soon as he said that, I decided, I'm not going anywhere. So I stayed. You know, and every day we went to discourse, twice in the evening and the morning. By then I'd moved in the ashram and I didn't really have a room. So I built a bamboo hut in the garden. I was working in the garden and I built a bamboo hut and lived in it for 4 years. Every year I would change the roof. I would rethatch the roof, you know. So yeah, that was my life. It became my life.
I know that you just said that those moments with Osho in the darshans are indescribable, but let's give it a go. Can you kind of give us a sense of what was going on?
There was a point where he would turn the lights off, all the lights in the ashram. It was called the blackout. And he would have some wild musicians playing in the darshan area, in Chungtasu, it was called. And you would be called up, and there were some women who were called the mediums, and they would be there giving energy as well and supporting the energy. And basically it felt like he was just running the whole energy of existence through your body. And I felt like I disappeared as a personality. And that lasted for quite a few days. You could always tell someone who just had one of these energy experiences because they would be walking around glowing with this energy, you know. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, I was starting to do music. I was working with Anubhava, who was the main musician. We were working together. Actually, we would go down to one of the therapy chambers and look at songs. So we started writing songs, and then we would take it into the main hall, and we would write songs that had different parts, and the women would sing one part and the men would sing other. And it was totally blissful. You know, we still sing those songs today. That was at exactly the same time when Osho was giving these energy works or doing the darshan. So the lights were out and there was an atmosphere of music. It was amazing just to be in that atmosphere. It was just the voices. You can still see the recordings of this on YouTube. I think there's some just amazing events where so many people were singing, you know, and dancing.
In a way, we can say that through those energy experiences with Osho, you got the inspiration to write those songs.
Yes. I think, like, there's a song called One Breath that I wrote, and it's kind of become world famous as a song that people sing. You know, it's a very short song. We still sing it today in our retreats in Costa Rica. It came to me in a darkness meditation. It just landed. And that's how a lot of songs land, you know. And I was just beginning to work with Mi Ten. That was like the early 90s then, you know. And we sang that song that night after I'd written it. And it was, so that's the way it was. You'd write a song and then you would perform it, but you would sing it before Osho came in for the evening discourse.
I've always been fascinated to hear how the creative process works. So in your case, how do you create your music and songs? You know, do they come to you? Do you have like words just appearing, or, you know, can you describe that moment, that process?
Yes. That's a really interesting question because I actually don't play guitar. You know, my left hand doesn't know what my right hand is doing sometimes. So I they just come to me. Normally, sometimes the words come and then the words seem to bring a natural melody, but then I do work at it. For instance, the other day I have a girlfriend who lives in Montreal. We don't see each other very often. We see each other in the retreats in Costa Rica. And I wrote to her, I said, you know, we don't live in the same city and I only see you once a year. And I suddenly realized it's a great song. So I continued it and I wrote this little song called Rock and Roll Children, just telling our community, our Sangha, that in this time of the COVID, just to keep dancing and the music will keep our hearts alive. And that became this very popular song over the last 2 weeks, you know, that people are singing, you know. And so, you know, I started really writing songs when I used to sing in folk music clubs in England in the 60s, the late 60s, when I was late teens, where I started singing. And then I joined a rock and roll band and we wrote songs there. But I think I honed my skill, if you like, in the ashram when you know, we would write songs about our love for Osho, and then we would write songs about our personal journey with Osho, you know. And it's wonderful working with a songwriter like Miten, because he's so skillful. You must have heard his music. And there's a song called Strong My Roots, which has been recorded all over the world, which I wrote in the 90s, and it's been recorded quite a lot. And I wrote that kind of just, you know, when I was just dancing, you know, the rhythm came to me when I was dancing. It's like a reggae rhythm, you know. And, you know, that's how I do it. I'm probably different from many other songwriters, that I don't sit down with a piano or a guitar.
Let me take this opportunity to thank you, particularly two songs that you mentioned. I didn't know you wrote those songs, and they are just charged with Osho energy. That's all I can say.
Oh, thank you so much. And there's another song called How Beautiful the Mystery, which I wrote. And that's also one of my favorite songs that I've written, I think, you know.
Going back a little bit to the books, because I'm very passionate about books. You mentioned that you wrote some introductions to some of Dashan Diaries. I'm curious to hear how the process worked. So did you have total freedom to write whatever you wanted, or did Osho check and approve the introduction?
Absolutely. Every word. And he would not change anything. I would send it to the editors, then they'd send it to him, and he would say, this is good, you know. And I think that was it, really. It was just a process of me writing it, and I would handwrite it. I didn't have typewriters or computers then, you know. Yeah.
Okay, so basically Osho was giving feedback. He was checking. He was reading every single introduction before going live. Okay, wonderful. Coming to some reflections on you, your life, and Osho, how meeting Osho and living in the commune changed your life?
Oh, it changed my life in the sense that I never really recognized the inner world. You know, I was always thinking you had to be, you know, there was this whole layer of whether you were educated or whatever that is so important in Britain, you know, and the world. And I was always feeling that I was a sort of lesser than other people. But when I came to Osho, I saw that this broad sort of spirituality, which we all have, this inner world, that through meditation, you start to connect with this, the essential, almost the blueprint, if that makes sense, you know. And I did quite a few I did Encounter Group and a few other things, but not many workshops that, you know, he was giving to other people. I just worked in the garden and worked in the community. And there was a beautiful woman who ran the garden, a woman called Mukta. And she was also Greek. She was fully Greek, and I'm only half Greek. But we had a beautiful time, and she was very close to Osho. She would always sit next to him. And she was almost like my conduit to him sometimes, you know. So just working with plants and working in the garden, I was in bliss a lot of the time. And then singing in the evening, you know, flirting with girls. And, you know, it was a glorious time in my life, you know, and it set me up for that. What, even today, you know, I mean, Osho's focus on meditation is really strong, and it's really helped me get through this COVID thing, you know. We do Zooms from our meditation center, and there are people from all over the world, you know, that tune in, which is so beautiful. You see the whole Sangha, world Sangha, that, you know, talking to you is amazing, because I see that there's still an alive Sangha, an alive community all over the world that were inspired and turned on to meditation by this man. Something came alive in me. It's like he switched on something that was always there, you know. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I feel that. I definitely feel that something alive in you. And you mentioned the Osho Sangha. And I think that's a beautiful topic, and it's very dear to me. And I'm wondering, because you have been with Osho when there was the Osho Sangha with the alive master, and now Osho left the body. So how do you feel in terms of connection with the Osho Sangha, or how do you see the Osho Sangha evolved during the time?
Well, through workshops like The Path of Love, we are the path of love. There's been a lot of new people come in who've never really experienced Osho in the body, but the love is so strong still there. I have a friend who's a professor at the university here in Colorado, and he's never seen Osho, or he suddenly discovered Osho, he and his wife, you know, and I don't feel any difference from whether we were there or whether these are newer people. Every year I go to Costa Rica with Deva and Miten, and I'm part of the staff that leads the meditations there. And Deva and Miten, you know, through their music, their concerts are thousands of people in their concerts, and they're almost like this. They're very much to do with Osho, you know, their songs and the mantras they sing. We sing, you know, in Costa Rica, we sing the Gayatri mantra 108 times, you know, and many people have become sannyasins there. You know, we do a little ceremony for them. Even though they don't sometimes wonder initially what it's about, they feel it. Something is transmitted through just the feeling of the Sangha, you know, this feeling of there's something vibrating still at this frequency. And I think Osho, even though he's not in the body, I feel him every day. When I was not so well recently, and I just sat for a long time just looking at this picture and looking in his eyes, and it was almost like it radiated through my body, this feeling of being with a master.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible. I love it. So tell me more about these events in Costa Rica with Deva Premal and Miten. You mentioned 1,000 people, and you mentioned great energy. You mentioned that you feel Osho presence, and that people take sannyas without perhaps even knowing exactly, but they just feel something and they go for it. So I'd love to hear more. It sounds so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, there's only probably about 80 or 90 people in that retreat, in this beautiful place in Blue Spirit, in this little town in Costa Rica. And, you know, I sleep in a tent in the jungle, and, you know, there's some big grounds there. It's very beautiful. And we start the day with Qigong, and Deva sings, a mantra or something. And then we have plenty of time to, you know, go to the ocean. Deva and Miten have been doing it. He and I became friends, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s. And we started writing some songs together and singing together. And then he met Deva, and they started doing concerts. They made one album, which was very successful. So, you know, every year they do a lot of concerts all over the world. Like, there was a movie called Mantra. There was a scene from Russia where there were thousands of people in the audience, you know, and it surprised me how in Russia, you know, I always thought of it as a sort of very repressive society. But a lot of the people who go to the ashram now are Israelis and Russians, you know, and people from the Eastern countries, you know, Czech Republic and things, and Ukraine as well, you know. A dear friend of mine here, who I'm going to meet tomorrow for my birthday, is a man who worked for the United Nations, and he lived in Ukraine. He was like one of the, he was an ambassador from the United Nations, and he's retired now, but he's very into Osho now. We talk a lot about Osho, and I just gave him this, this discourse on the new man that Osho said, you know, and in this COVID thing, this man is really investigating how we're going to be after this COVID thing is over, how, whether there will be a kind of new man that develops out of, you know, with kindness and more. So it's a really interesting topic for him. And he's very influenced by Osho when he comes to the satsangs. There's all kinds of things happening. And I met this guy in Costa Rica with Deva and Miten. So, you know, I still make a lot of music with them. And it's a very social thing in this retreat in Costa Rica for, you know, it's 10 days, I think. And I lead Kundalini, I lead the breathing meditations and different meditations. And lately I'm really seeing that Osho says when we're in the world, meditation will get us through the times when, you know, we sometimes struggle. But that inner world is so important, you know, to do the Kundalini, the dynamic. You know, we do meditations every day. It's very, the Costa Rica retreats are very much Osho. You know, Deva and Miten have never backed down, even though there a lot of people come who had initially never heard of Osho. They just come for the music. They bought the CDs of Deva and Miten. But, you know, they're impacted very deeply by just, we carry Osho with us. You know, the sannyasins who were there and lived there, it was almost like it was implanted in us. I hate to say missionaries, but we carry his message in hopefully in our beings. I mean, you know, I'm not perfect. I have sometimes a lot of struggles, but I always feel that I had these blessings from him.
Absolutely. And I feel it through the podcast. When I talk to you guys, it comes out very strongly, even through Skype. And I spoke to Miten, and the episode I highly recommend it to anyone. He's so in love with Osho today, and it's so beautiful. And I'm so excited that next week I'm going to interview Deva Premal. So that's amazing. So in terms of how do you see the newer generations, might be young people and even not young people. The example you mentioned before of that man who, you know, worked at the UN. How do you feel these guys are perceiving Osho compared to your generation when you were there with Osho in the body?
I think it's been distilled to something even beyond his body, something like through his books and through the meditations. You know, I meet quite a lot of people in my practice. I do cranial sacral therapy. You know, I meet people who are young people who are quite struggling with this new, there's a lot of new stuff, you know, the relationship between men and women and how to date without in a new way, without being abusive or whatever to women. A lot of men, young men, are struggling with that, and women and young women. I used to keep my body work very separate from the meditation center because, you know, I don't like to proselytize or preach, you know, oh, this is an answer for you. But lately I've started to give our business card from the meditation center to some of these young people, and they are coming. They're coming to the breath meditations, and some of them have even become sannyasins through doing the path of love. Or whatever, you know, and I'm not saying I'm this great sort of, you know, whatever, but I say this is available to you. You know, it's very subtle. It doesn't initially give answers to some of their questions, but as they start to do meditations, they start to realize that it's another, there are other dimensions that are available to them. How to live life. I'm very much a love guy. You know, I wrote a song that only love can keep the heart alive. You know, I think, you know, kindness and love, for, and especially now, it's very important to be a sort of beacon in some sort of dark times, you know.
What's Osho's biggest contribution to humanity in your view?
That's a really beautiful question. I think giving people an alternative and also just awakening that energy in people, you know, awakening that possibility that they can not change even, but just celebrate. And also there's a non-seriousness about his spirituality. I mean, I grew up with these old Christians, and it was all sort of deep. You know, you're either going to hell, or if you sin, or all that old Christian dogmas. Osho with his jokes, his lightheartedness and the dancing and the music changed all that for me. And I saw that was his greatest contribution, to make it less serious and to see that we can live a life. You know, again, I wrote a song, Drunk on the Wine of Love. That's very, you know, I love to read the poetry of Hafez, and it's like that. He's lighthearted too, this old Sufi. I think that's one of Osho's greatest contributions, and to not condemn ourselves for all the, what we believe is wrong with us. You know, I think that's a really important thing, that because we just have to wake up something else. You know, our conditioning is one thing, but underneath that conditioning, I'm always aware that there is this other really lively place that was awoken, if you like, when I met Osho. And I think that for people to just feel that there's the power of the longing. You know, the power of the longing to be free. I think he really stimulated the power of the longing.
I agree totally. Power of the longing. It's beautiful. One thing that I've been kind of thinking about lately quite strongly, quite a lot, is this idea that Osho's always had a bad reputation and bad media coverage. At the same time, Osho is available. So if someone has a longing and goes, you know, YouTube or Facebook or Google, you know, Osho is there. Or in many bookshops, there are books of Osho available. But there is so much negativity. You know, the media coverage after Wild Wild Country, most of the headlines are emphasizing the cult, the scandals. So do you think there is an issue there? Or at the end of the day, Osho is available and whoever wants to connect to him, they can just find him.
Yes. Let me tell you something. There was this Netflix thing, you probably saw it, about the commune in Oregon, right? And even though it was more about Sheila and all the some of the negativity that happened there, and I was never a fan of Sheila, this woman who ran that. But, you know, there were probably sometimes 4,000 people there, and she just had a group of about five women and her negative influence on the place. So, but the people who watched that, that a lot of people I've talked to, and we showed it at the center just to see what the reaction was. But a lot of people, my clients who saw it, say, I loved it. I loved the fact that this happened in America, even though it's portrayed in a kind of slightly negative way. And they started coming to the center, some of these people. They people just see the essence of it, the essence of a fact that a master would have a group of people together with this great experiment that we did. And a lot of people, and Miten told this great story the other day on Zoom. He said that he was in a bookstore in Australia, and there was a statue of Osho in the bookstore. And this woman came in and said, oh, that Bhagwan, you shouldn't have a statue of him. He was this sexual guy, you know, and all this. She started ranting on about it. And then she said, if you really want to read a real master, you should read Osho. Because she didn't realize that Osho and Bhagwan were the same person. So she had this negative thing about Bhagwan, but she'd also read Osho and not realized. So it was a very funny story because she was her confusion. There was so much humor in it. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, so people are not, you know, some of the most intelligent people were on the ranch and on, you know, and with Osho, you know, and they saw through. Osho's a rascal. He was a rascal. He would tell these pretty, you know, sort of raunchy jokes. And that was just to make people, that was to wake up their humor and laughter and not see life so seriously. And I think that is what attracts people. I think I'm never worried that Osho's going to attract the wrong people. I think when people get it or read a book and, you know, I've met people who were kind of not sure about it. Then they met the people. They met the people, the Sangha, the people around who've been with Osho. And we're not monsters. We're not cultists. We're not going to be like Charles Manson or one of these cults. We're these decent people who live decent lives and do good work, you know, and poets and creators and singers like Deva and Miten, you know, we're the wild dancers who free themselves in the light of love.
Ah, beautiful, very poetic. I love this image. Okay, so we are heading towards the end, and normally finish the interview with the three questions I ask all the guests on the show. But before that, is there anything else that I didn't ask you or you would like to add that we didn't cover?
You know, I'm so touched by you, and, you know, you probably weren't in Pune when, you know, Osho was in the body, and I don't know, but it's just so nice to talk to someone across the planet, you know, just to feel your love for this man, and just these, even on Zoom calls these days, and this call, it warms my heart.
Likewise, absolutely. This podcast is a beautiful opportunity to connect with Osho lovers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I put a song with Punya, put it on her Osho News, this song called Gatherers of Light. It's an old song of mine. And that's what we are. We're gatherers of light.
Yes. That's wonderful. So, Abhi, I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, it's changed a lot since I've been, you know, this COVID thing, since I've been quarantined for 6 weeks. And I did have a little heart thing going on because my daughter had the virus. And so I was a little worried about that. And I think the stress sort of affected me. So I sometimes do a meditation. Sometimes I just get up and have a bath and sing in the bath, you know, and sometimes I have to get myself together and go to the office and do a session. But it's always different. But now I think I tune in a lot to myself, what I'm feeling, what my dreams were like. Very often these days I go to the center. I do the garden in the center, and it's my first sort of venture into the world after being locked down for a while, just to go and do the garden at the meditation center. You know, I've got a friend who's struggling with a relationship or something, you know, and she calls me and I spend some time on the phone with her, you know, not giving advice, but just that companionship. So it's always different. Every day is different. And, you know, I live in a fairly little town and I do like my coffee in the morning. So, you know, I'm just an ordinary guy who gets up and drinks a cup of coffee. And I don't look at the news so much these days, but, you know, if there's something funny, I will watch it on. I'm feeling this aliveness these days, you know, even though sometimes we're living in strange times, you know, but that's basically it.
Hey, and you are in good company with the morning coffee. There are many coffee lovers on this podcast, Milare, Parada, and many more. They love having their morning coffee.
Rada, man, she's one of my dearest old friends and sometimes more. And so we're really, really, really connected, Rada. That's Italian Rada, right?
Yeah, the Italian Rada, yes.
Yeah, oh, man. I think she'll always... I've got a special place in my heart for her.
Oh, likewise. And I'm sure many other people.
Yeah, man, she's so... And Mila Raper and I have been doing music together for years. Sometimes we would fight in the music department, but, you know, there's great love there.
Wonderful. So we are all united by the coffee then.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Jai coffee.
So the last question is, you live the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
You know, as I'm 74 tomorrow, I'm slowing down, but in the slowing down, I think I'm kind of feeling like this sense of peace, you know. It's been a really interesting thing to be with Osho in this time, because I've had time to digest some of who I am in terms of whether I just deal in personality or whether I'm, you know, it's not always bliss, you know, I mean, it's, but I think that I have so much availability to his teachings. And I think, you know, I have to really sort of just see that I'm blessed. I think every day I feel blessed, you know, by this. And the community around him is very strong in Boulder, you know, it's just reaching out. Sometimes in our Zoom satsangs, we have like 40 people from all over the world, from Europe, from South America. And it's an amazing thing to see these people and just to feel Osho with, you know, they're coming through the screen. You can really feel it. You know, this, if you tune deeply in to the feeling, you can, it's not like you're just watching a computer screen. You can really feel the soul and heart of these people as they speak about their experience and that speak about their love for Osho, you know? And that's really very basic for me at the moment, to feel the sangha and the what my part in it is, you know?
Very beautiful. I really love this. And I think it's a wonderful way to finish this interview. It's been an absolute pleasure connecting with you, feeling your love for Osho and, you know, connection with the master. I love you and I thank you for that.
Yeah, and let me just say one thing. Anybody can tune into the Zoom if they want to connect with me to find out the Zoom number, because we do it every Sunday morning. We also do the meditations. So if anybody wants to, I'm sure there's a lot available, but we're going to continue doing that till this thing is over. Well, blessings, Saran. And, you know, it was really beautiful to talk to you.
My pleasure. And I'll link your contact details in the show notes of the episode. So anyone who wants to connect with you online via Zoom, they can find you there.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. Blessings to you and namaste.
Namaste and lots of love. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit lavoshow.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.